welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, bringing you an hour of science fiction. Later on, John W. Campbell Jr. hosts the Exploring Tomorrow series, but right now, a sci-fi tale on the mysterious traveler called Fire in the Sky. This first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on August 28, 1951.
Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Coburn, and starring three of radio's foremost actors, Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Janney, in Fire in the Sky.
Inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join two young people who find themselves in the strangest situation human beings ever encountered. It's a story I call Fire in the Sky. It's late evening, and a convertible with the top down is driving along a lonely road in the Shenandoah Valley. The driver is young, in his 20s. So is the girl beside him. They're Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Ramsey of New York City, married less than 24 hours, and honeymooning. Nick Ramsey is driving slowly, for both he and Sally are watching the great golden disk which is rising in the sky above the hills to the west. Not the moon, but the new comet which the whole world is talking about with excited interest, and some apprehension.
Nick, it's so bright. It's grown much brighter since last night.
Yes, I know. Seems to be about half as big as the moon now. You can almost see it grow.
It looks as if it were coming right at us.
Well, that's just an illusion. It'll pass about 15 million miles away, the radio said.
15 million? It sounds like a lot. But I wish it were more.
Oh, they said it wouldn't do much damage even if it hit us head on. Comets are mostly gas, you know.
Well, it certainly looks solid. It is beautiful, though, isn't it? I'm glad we decided to drive tonight so we could watch it.
Let's turn on the news and see what the radio says about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try Washington. Danny Dunn has been giving a blow-by-blow account of its approach.
Hello, everybody. Everywhere. This is your feature reporter, Danny Dunn, speaking from Washington. Well, the big news tonight is still Comet X, as it's been nicknamed. Tonight, it seems it's going to pass little old Earth a bit closer than was thought. Maybe inside 10 million miles. But it's nothing to worry about. Can't hurt us any. A comet is just gas, you know. Like some congressman here in Washington. Oh, speaking of Washington, the president and his cabinet quietly left town today with their families. We're told they're going to a special government observatory where they can all see Comet X through telescopes. Well, that just shows you how interested everybody is. The rest of the world is standing outdoors tonight, keeping an eye on the sky. After all, this is a spectacle mankind sees only once in 1,000 years, and nobody wants to miss it. Well, folks, the government has asked me to pass along the following to you. Don't be alarmed if Comet X seems to be getting awfully close.
I guess there's nothing new.
It's just an optical illusion.
Nick, look up ahead. Somebody's signaling us with a flashlight.
Yeah, it looks like an old codger, one of the local natives, I guess.
Well, do you think we ought to stop? It's a lonely road.
Oh, he probably just wants a lift. Anyway, he's so old he couldn't hurt us any. Hello, you want a lift?
Oh, evening, folks. Mighty glad you come along. I need some help back.
Help?
It's my partner. Rock slide fell on him, crushed his chest in. He's down in the mine. I need help to get him out.
You're a miner?
That's right, ma'am. Name's Jones. Jerry Jones. We got us a mine up this road about a quarter of a mile. Poor Sam hurt himself an hour ago. Been waiting ever since for somebody to come along.
Well, Sally, I guess it's up to us. We can't leave some poor fella dying and not help.
But, Nick, are you sure?
I'm sure it's all right. Okay, hop in, Mr. Jones. We'll have your partner out just as quick as we can.
Covers the mine shaft.
Well, come along, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry we haven't any first aid equipment, Mr. Jones.
Oh, got some down below. This way, Mr. Ramsey. You have to go down on the lift.
Nick, look how bright it is. The comet seems to be growing bigger by the minute.
Here we are. Step inside, folks. I got the flashlight.
We've got a regular mine lift in here. Machinery and everything. What kind of mine is this?
It used to be a coal mine. Got abandoned. Me and Sam, we found a little vein of diamonds down in the coal.
Diamonds?
Now, wait a minute. There aren't any diamond mines in this country.
Sure there is. Got some down below. Prove it to you after we fix up, Sam. Please step on lift, Mr. Ramsey.
Nick, I think this is a trick.
So do I. A diamond mine. Listen, Jones, coal and diamonds don't go together, even though they're both carbon. So we're not getting on that lift.
I'm afraid you have to, Mr. Ramsey. Believe me, I'll shoot if you try to get away.
Nick, a gun.
Now listen, put away that revolver. I don't know what kind of crazy scheme this is,
but... It's not crazy. I'm trying to save your lives.
Save our lives?
You see that comet in the sky?
Yes.
They're calling it Comet X. They should be calling it Doomsday.
You are crazy.
That's enough talk. In 14 hours, this Earth and that comet are going to meet, and time is precious. Get on that lift, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, or I'll shoot. Believe me, no harm will come to you if you do just as I say.
Yeah, I guess we'd better do it, Sally. There's no use in arguing with a madman who has a gun.
Oh, you say so, Nick.
Now, that's better. Now, hold on tightly. Don't do anything foolish. If you don't know how to operate this lift, then we have a 1,000-foot drop below us.
We've been going down for so long now.
We're almost at the bottom, Mrs. Ramsey. Please don't be frightened. I'm doing this for your own good.
Hey, who are you? You're not a native. You lost your hillbilly accent long ago.
No, I'm not. It was just a crude disguise. My name is Jeremiah Jones, formerly Professor Jones. Now, we've reached bottom. The surface of the Earth is 1,000 feet above us. Now, Mr. Ramsey, if you and your wife try to attack me, you might succeed. It would be very foolish. You'll need me to get you out of here again.
Yes, I suppose that's right.
Very well, please walk quietly ahead of me. These old mine shafts are quite level. Now, shine my flashlight ahead and you won't have any difficulty.
I suppose we have to humor you, but why are you doing this? What are you up to?
You won't believe me if I tell you, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, that you two are the most important people in the world tonight. So just walk ahead of me and we'll have the explanations later.
Further is it? All these tunnels are winding and twisting. Nick, I'm completely lost.
Listen, Jones, if that's your name, come to your senses. Take us back to the surface and we'll forget this happened.
Careful, there's the door ahead of you.
Oh, yes.
Push it open and go in.
Well, shine your flashlight inside. We can't see a thing.
You'll find a light switch beside the door. Turn it on.
Nick, he's closed the door.
He's locking us in. Jones,
Jones! Please, Mr. Ramsey. Turn on the light and just wait calmly. I'll be back. I have to go to the surface now to see if I can rescue anyone else.
Jones! Jones!
Oh, gone.
Nick. Nick, I'm frightened.
No, it'll be all right, Sally. I'm sure it will. There was a light switch, didn't it?
Yes.
If you can find it, it should be here beside the door. Maybe it's higher. There, I've got it. Good Lord.
Nick, we're in a room. Completely furnished.
Yeah.
Chairs, tables, electric lights. There's even a radio.
Through those archways, I can see a kitchen, another room. But this place is like a furnished apartment.
1,000 feet underground, with walls of solid rock. And he's locked us in here. But why, Nick, why?
I don't know, Sally, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Nick, what time is it? How long have we been down here?
2 a.m. We've been locked in here nearly 4 hours.
Nick, it's crazy. He's a madman. He must be.
I wonder. If he's mad, there's certainly a method in his madness.
But
look around you. This furniture. A radio. A kitchen. There must be a generator someplace to supply these lights.
That's what I mean. Only a madman would fix up an old abandoned mine like this.
You know, I've just placed his name. Professor Jeremiah Jones.
Who is it?
He's an obscure astronomer who 10 years ago claimed to have discovered a comet no one else could see. And he dropped out of sight.
He seems to have an obsession about comets. He said Comet X should be called Doomsday.
Yes, yes, I know. And I can't help wondering. Let's turn on that radio again. I have a hunch we'll be getting some news soon. Real news.
All right. Nick, how can a radio work way down here underground?
He must have a wire running above to the surface.
Just music.
Well, let's leave it on. Maybe a bulletin.
Mm.
Hello, everybody. This is your special reporter, Danny Dunn, back with a very important bulletin.
Nick.
Shh, we've got to
I have just come from a meeting at the Smithsonian Institute, and I have some last-minute news about our mysterious visitor, Comet X.
He's leading up to something.
Now, folks, I don't want to alarm you. Panic won't help anybody. But it looks as if there may be some danger after all. It's only common sense to be prepared for it.
Oh, Nick.
It seems Comet X is not holding to the course predicted for it. Its orbit now intersects the Earth. In about 10 hours, the Earth will pass through the glowing heart of the comet.
Just as Professor Jones
told us. But I repeat, there is no cause for undue alarm. I have Mr. Andrew Weatherby, head of the Scientific Bureau, here at the microphone, to tell you in person what to expect. Mr. Weatherby.
Nick, give me your hand. I'm frightened.
Yes, this is big if they've got Weatherby himself on the air.
Good evening, everyone. As you all know, a comet is composed largely of glowing gases. Just what effect these gases may have when the Earth passes through them, we do not know. But we anticipate they will be so tenuous, they will hardly be noticeable. However, accompanying the comet is a core of tiny particles of rock and iron. Now these, entering our atmosphere, will cause a spectacular display of shooting stars and may do some damage.
You'll bet.
Accordingly, the government is asking everyone to take the following precautions. Within the next 8 hours, take shelter. Underground, if possible. Otherwise, in cellars or in air raid shelters. Take with you all the food and water you can manage. Take bedding, warm clothes. And be prepared to stay under shelter for at least 48 hours. Begin your preparations now. You will receive further instructions by radio. But above all, remain calm.
Well, folks, this is Danny Dunn again. I'll be standing by all night long to bring you the latest. Keep tuned in and don't worry. This will be a great story to tell your grandchildren. So long for now.
Nick, there's something they're not telling us. I'm sure of it. Do you suppose that the cup...
Mr. Jones back. Why, Professor?
Nick, he has 2 little children with him. Oh, one of them is just a baby. A little girl. Here, give it to me. It's all right. You mustn't cry. Everything's all right.
Thank you.
Well, if you, Mr. Ramsey, can take this little boy. Fortunately, he's still sleeping.
Yes, let me have him. I've got him. Now, you sit down. You're all in, and there's blood on your coat.
I'm afraid I've been shot.
Oh. I'll put the boy on the couch there. Yes, he's still sleeping soundly. Now, let me look at you. Let me get this coat off. I'm sorry, but it's got to come off. There. Uh-oh, you've lost a lot of blood.
Yes, I know it. Too much, I'm afraid.
You'll have to cut your shirt loose and fix the bandage. Sally, can you help me?
Oh, yes, baby's gone back to sleep. I'll put her down on the couch, too. There. Now, what do I do, Nick?
I'm going to cut away the shirt. You pull it loose as I cut.
All right.
How did you get shot, Professor, and where did you get those children?
I went out to bring back more people to this shelter. There were no cars on the road. I went to a house a mile or so away. Family and some visitors were out in the lawn watching the comet.
That's fine, Sally. Now give me something to wipe away the blood.
Oh, here, my scarf.
I knew if I tried to persuade them, they'd think I was crazy. I saw the children, the boy and the girl, asleep in the back room. I stole them. The baby woke up and cried. Somebody shot at me. I got away in the darkness.
Catch him, Nick.
I've got him. Help me ease him into the chair.
All right.
He's passed out from loss of blood. And here we are, stuck down in an old mine 1,000 feet underground with 2 children that he's taken from their families. Here I am. So you're awake. How are you feeling?
Very weak, I'm afraid. How are the children?
Oh, they're fine. Luckily, they're too young to be scared. Sally's out in the kitchen feeding them. Now, look here, Professor. It's one thing to lure us down here. It's another thing to steal 2 babies and
please,
bring them in.
Mr. Ramsey, face the facts. Haven't I convinced you the entire world is in grave danger?
Danger? From what? A few chunks of stone that may be part of a comet? The radio last night admitted some damage might be done.
Some damage? What do the broadcasts say now?
No, we haven't listened. After we got you into bed last night and took care of the children, Sally and I just fell asleep. Since we woke up, we've been so busy we haven't had a chance to listen.
Then turn on the radio now. Let's listen.
Of course. While you were gone, Andrew Weatherby urged everyone to take shelter for a few days.
Hello, everybody. This is Dan Dunn, sleepy, but still on the job. Well, I guess you won't find anything else on the radio this morning except the comet. It's so bright you can see it blazing away in the morning sky like a baby sun. It's about 4 hours before its path intersects ours.
4 hours?
I repeat again the official advice. Take shelter. Stay undercover for the next few days, but don't panic. Panic is more dangerous than the comet, believe me. I have to admit that a lot of people have unfortunately lost their heads the last few hours. Roads leading out of every city are clogged with refugees trying to get away. A good many people have been killed in the crush of crowds fleeing the cities. There have reports of hundreds of auto accidents, some looting. Fires are burning unchecked in a number of places. Firemen are fleeing with the others. Washington this morning is a deserted city. So many people here have orders, you know, and they were able to get away. All the air raid shelters are full. People in them are being very calm about it. Our news from other places is a bit scanty. Some lines are down. And I'll keep bringing you all the bulletins as they come in. Right now, I've got to get a little rest, so this is Dan Dunn, signing off temporarily, folks.
Well, are you convinced now, Mr. Ramsey?
Oh, people are losing their heads because they're scared. But that still doesn't say the comet is actually dangerous to the Earth.
Yes, I know. It wouldn't be if it was just an ordinary comet. But it isn't.
Well, what is it then?
Mr. Ramsey, the fiery head of Comet X is radioactive.
Radioactive?
It will envelop the world in a searing bath of atomic fire. In 12 hours, civilization will have come to an end.
the professor, Nick?
Unconscious. His fever is high, and he's in a delirium. His pulse is very weak.
If only we could do something for him.
I've done what I could from the medicine chest. In his mind now, he's reliving the time 10 years ago when he first discovered Comet X and predicted that it was radioactive.
He predicted that?
Yes, we had quite a talk while you were busy with the two kids. He was an obscure professor of astronomy in a little college. He found a speck of light wandering around in the sky, identified it as a comet, analyzed it as being radioactive, and predicted that on its next visit it would strike the Earth.
And nobody believed him?
Well, the comet had vanished by then. Everybody thought he'd imagined it. And when he claimed it was radioactive and would destroy civilization, that was too much. He was fired, he had a breakdown, and was in an institution for years.
Oh, yes, now I remember. I read something about it years ago. But the war was on it.
And people had other things to think about. Everybody forgot Professor Jones and the comet. You see, the atomic bomb hadn't been developed then, so the idea of an atomic comet was considered plain crazy.
And now it's come true. Oh, Nick.
Yeah. Well, let's turn the radio on again, see if Danny Dunn is still broadcasting.
All right. What time is it?
Well, my watch says 8. Must be 8 at night. No way to be sure, way down here underground.
Well, everybody, I don't guess there's much more I can say. We're broadcasting from the sub-basement of the building. There's about 6 of us locked in here. I don't know how much longer we can hold out. We haven't had any communication from outside Washington for the last hour. All wires are dead. Can't pick up any other radio broadcasts. Washington's a dead city now. It's a weird sight. We have a television camera hooked up on the roof. Shows all of the big government buildings outlined by a ghostly greenish light. Luminous gas surrounding the head of Comet X. We're right in the middle of the comet now. About 6 hours before it starts to withdraw. Anybody who can hear me, stay underground as long as you possibly can. Don't come out. The radioactivity will be deadly for a long time yet. Estimates vary. One guess was that our Earth will be poisoned for 20 years to come. In that case, our power seems to be failing. I guess we'll have to sign off now. So long, everybody.
She's gone up the air.
Nick. Nick, think of the whole world dead.
Now, wait a minute, darling. There's bound to be millions of people in safe places like we are. Caves, tunnels, old mines.
Yes, but did you hear what he said? The Earth may be poisoned by radioactivity for years.
Yes, Professor?
I'd like some water.
Of course.
I'll bring it. Here you are, Professor Jones.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
My head is clear, but I'm very weak. How long was I unconscious?
Almost 2 days.
2 days? And the comet
has come and gone.
And the world...
The radio's dead. We can't pick up anything.
The last report from Washington said it was a dead city.
If only they listened to me 10 years ago.
Now, you mustn't upset yourself, Professor. You did everything one man could.
Yes, yes. When I was released from that institution last year, I set about fixing up this refuge. I bought the old mine. All by myself, I brought down furnishings, machinery. When I tried to get a few people to join me here, they thought I was insane again.
We understand, Professor.
In the end, I had to resort to desperate trickery, which got you here.
And we're very grateful for it, sir.
And I stole 2 children, a boy and a girl. Out of the whole world, you four of all I saved.
But there must be other people alive somewhere.
Yes. Yes, of course, now. By the time the surface of the Earth is livable again...
Will it really be 20 years?
Yes, Mrs. Ramsey. The between 15 and 20 years before the human race can once again live on the Earth's surface.
But in even 15 years, the people who are still alive now...
Exactly. Some will live. Human race is very tough. But they may be terribly changed. To reestablish civilization, we can only be sure of you four.
Oh, no.
My dear, you mustn't be dismayed. I've planned carefully. There's everything you'll need for 20 years down in this cavern. Medicine, food, clothing, books, gasoline. You must not go above ground until it is absolutely safe. Then you will find the world changed. Animal life, plant life, it may have been altered greatly by the radioactivity, but it will be safe.
Professor, you're too weak to talk.
Oh, no, I must talk now. I haven't much more time.
Of course you have. You're going to get well, Professor. We need you.
I wish I could, but I won't. And now listen. Build for a better world. We seem to have gotten off the track somehow. Maybe nature simply decided to be done with us when she sent that comet. I don't know. But this is a chance to start over again and do better.
Professor. Professor Jones.
Nick, he's not...
I'm afraid he is. He's dead, darling.
We're left. You and me. Down here, 1,000 feet underground. We have to live here. For 20 years or more. Oh, Nick, no.
That you can't give way, Sally. We've got too much to do. Listen.
This baby. I've got to go to him.
That's what I mean. We have to take good care of those kids.
Yes, of course, Nick. Of course we do.
And we'll have to give them names. We could call them Adam and Eve, but let's not. Suppose we just call them Johnny and Susie.
Yes, Nick. All right, Susie. I'm coming. I'm coming.
Check up on something. Would you just step outside and have a look at the sky? There's a speck of light up there, just to the right of the North Star. It wasn't there last night, and I was just wondering if you... Oh, but it couldn't be a comet, of course not. And even if it is, I'm sure we're in no danger. Of course, if you'd like to know the location of a nice, deep cave... Oh, you have to get off here, I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from August 28, 1951, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System. The storyteller, or the traveler, Maurice Tarplin, was in all of the broadcasts of The Mysterious Traveler, at one time a daily show on Mutual. But he was also rented out, as it were, or worked for the Radio Actors Union on other networks like NBC's Cloak and Dagger series and their High Adventure show. And just a couple of days before that last broadcast, he was heard as an actor on the Now Hear This series, released by Navy Recruiting, telling stories of naval adventure and challenges on the sea.
Incredible, but true.
Out of the fires of war have come countless stories of strange and incredible events. Many of these science has dismissed as the fabrications of minds overwrought by the excitement of battle. But in the reputable English periodical, The National Message, may be found a report by one Captain Cecil W. Haywood, which can scarcely be explained away so easily. However tense the battle, is it likely that thousands of minds would be affected with the same delusion?
In the dark hours of early 1918, Captain Haywood was stationed at the town of Bethune, France, near the famous Basse Front. The British position was precarious.
We're getting up a position then, Major.
We've got to, Captain. We're outnumbered 3-1.
Wouldn't it be advisable, sir, to cover the withdrawal? A few volunteers could man the edge of the canal.
They wouldn't last 10 minutes.
Those 10 minutes might save 10,000 lives. If you permit me, sir, I'd like to command the volunteers.
Hastily entrenched at the edge of the canal, a handful of grim-faced, silent men repulsed wave after wave of the unleashed fury of enemy troops.
How many shells left, Private?
Only a couple hundred rounds, sir.
Grenades?
What grenades, sir?
Well, at least let's make the shells count.
Yes, sir. We'll...
Here they come again. Steady now.
Look at the blasted Chinese now. Coming down over the bank like a swarm of ants. Before you know it, they're... Sir? What's happened, sir?
They've stopped firing. And look, they're turning back.
Yes, suddenly, and for no apparent reason, the Germans had ceased to advance. They were scrambling back to their positions. And then...
They've started up again, sir.
Yes, but not at us.
God, blimey. You're right, sir. They're popping away at that hill over there.
But why, Private? Why? There's not a soul on it. Why should they be firing an empty hill?
And if that were not incredible enough... A moment later, before the astonished eyes of the captain and the gunner, the entire German army suddenly broke its lines and began to flee in the wildest confusion. Quickly, the retreating British army consolidated its lines and counterattacked. Within a short time, the Germans, who had had victory within their grasp, were overwhelmed. As the prisoners began pouring in, Captain Haywood, still baffled by the incredible incident, visited the prison yard to interview them.
I want to know why you retreated. Why did your artillery fire at the hill?
Then you did not see the cavalry?
Cavalry? What cavalry?
On the hill. Men in white uniform on white horses. There were thousands of them.
You were firing at men on white horses?
Yeah, but it did no good. We could not stop them. They kept right on riding and not a single one of them fell.
The triumph of the British at Bethune must be attributed to an apparition, a mysterious and unexplained vision which turned the tide of battle. Every German prisoner, among them many officers of high rank, told this same story to Captain Haywood. A story incredible but true.
You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now an episode of Exploring Tomorrow, hosted by sci-fi editor at the time, John W. Campbell. This episode first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on February 12th, 1958, called The Mutants.
Exploring Tomorrow. Here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, John Campbell, Jr.
Yes, some things are just plain wrong. No rightness about them. Atomic war is one of those things. If we get started on a real atomic war, you see, ordinary war destroys men. Atomic war can destroy humanness by producing mutations that aren't human. But there's another thing that's wrong, too. And that's the wrongness of fooling yourself. Not merely others, but fooling yourself. And that's tonight's story.
And you say the annual budget of this institution is $8 million, Dr. Hawley?
That's right, Senator Bryan. $8 million a year for the care and feeding of...
The freaks, Doctor?
Oh, we try never to think of them as freaks, Senator, and never to speak of them that way. Some of them have unusually sensitive hearing.
Yes, but they are...
Well, they're mutants, Senator. Genetic sports created by radioactive fallout. You might say they're martyrs to the criminal stupidity of the 20th century.
Well, is it compulsory for a mutant to live in an institution like this? I confess I'm not completely familiar with the legal aspect.
Compulsory? No, Senator. It's not compulsory. But it's often simpler for a mutant to live within these walls than out there in the world at large.
So I can understand that.
80% of them have come here voluntarily.
And the rest?
Committed by relatives who couldn't stand the sight of them. But, come, let me show you some of the patients, Senator. That's Anna over there. You'll notice I didn't bother knocking. Anna doesn't hear sound. When she wants privacy, she just bolts her door.
But, what is she doing?
Thinking.
That's all? Just thinking?
Well, that's all she ever does, Senator. She's busy working on a new cosmological theory. Come, Senator. We're disturbing her concentration. Let's try another room. You know, there are many different types of mutations, of course, Senator. Hardly any two are alike. And some of our patients are simply physically deformed. You know, an extra limb, a strange texture of skin, differences like that. But others are more or less normal physically, but have unusual mental abilities. And still others, like Anna here, well, they're both deformed and mentally unusual. Now, in this room, we have a pair of remarkable mutants.
Dr. Hawley, what's that coming up the hall toward us?
It's Merrick, one of our more interesting patients.
Let them wander around the hall.
This isn't a prison, Senator.
Hello there, Merrick. Where are you heading?
I'm taking a little walk, Dr. Hawley.
This is Senator Bryan. He's paying us a visit here today. He's on the Senate Appropriations Committee.
How interesting. I'm leaving here, Dr. Hawley, right now.
Leaving? But you haven't been out of here in 10 years, Merrick.
I've decided to give the world another chance.
You know the rules, Merrick. If you volunteer to come in as a patient, you have to give 3 months' notice. Now, that way we can prepare you for life in the outside world.
I'm leaving right now, Doctor. 10 minutes after I'm gone, you will forget all about this. You remember there was once a Clyde Merrick here, but according to your records, he was discharged today, September 4th, 2019. You go directly to the recording computer and make the change. And as for you, Senator, whatever your name, you will have no recollection whatever of this conversation. And when you return to Washington, you will do your best to see that Dr. Hawley's appropriation is increased. Is all that clear? Good. Goodbye, Dr. Hawley. Thank you for everything.
Very well, Senator. Let's continue our little tour now. Suppose I let you see our recreational therapy wing now.
It's all right, Doctor. I don't feel very well. Could we sit down and rest for a while? The oddest sensation in my head. It's as if I fell asleep for a few minutes. I had a very strange dream. A young man talking to me.
Maybe a little fresh air. It's rather warm in here.
Yes, yes, yes. Fresh air would be good.
Straight through that corridor. It'll take you to the courtyard. I'll be with you in just a moment. I have to stop in at the office and make an entry on a patient's record. Something I've been meaning to do for a long time. I keep forgetting it. I'll be with you in a moment, Senator.
You know, the danger you can't stop is the danger that by its very nature keeps you from seeing that it's there or knowing that you've met it. That's a hard one to stop. It camouflages itself so that you don't even know you encountered it.
Driving to town, miss?
Yes. Yes, I am, but I never pick up strangers when I'm driving alone. But why did I stop the car?
You will give me a lift.
Sure. Climb in. Over here next to me.
Thanks. I was sure you would change your mind.
Oh, This is an awfully lonely part of the country to be hitching a ride in. Where are you coming from?
You see that building up on the hill with the brick fence around it?
Yes.
Do you know what that is?
Some sort of government hospital, isn't it?
Close. It's a sanctuary for mutants. That's where I was coming from.
From the mutant sanctuary? But are you a...
A mutant? Do I look like one?
I don't know. You look... You look...
How do I look? I look perfectly normal, don't I?
Yes, you... You look perfectly normal in every way.
Tell me how I look to you.
You're tall, blonde, blue eyes, broad shoulders, nice smile.
You'd say I was good looking?
Yes. Yes, I'd say you were quite handsome.
Thank you. What's your name?
Lisa Roberts. You?
My name is Clyde Merrick.
Oh, you must work at the sanctuary, then.
Yes, that's right. I work there. This is my afternoon off, and I thought I'd hitch a ride into town for some fun.
Well, you're lucky I stopped for you. I'm going all the way into town. You know, it's funny, too. I never usually stop for strangers. Tony says I shouldn't.
Well, who is Tony?
My fiancé.
You're going to get married, then.
That's what having a fiancé usually means. Yeah, we're getting married in December. Going for a long cruise on our honeymoon.
What do you do, Lisa?
Do? Oh, I'm a dancer. Maybe you've seen me on TV. I'm usually on every Saturday night. Not that anyone ever remembers a girl from the chorus.
I don't look at TV much, I'm afraid. Is this Tony of yours a dancer, too?
Yes, he's the leading man of the show.
You love him very much, don't you? You could never think of marrying anyone else.
You do talk strangely sometimes. I guess it's because you're around those crazy mutants all the time. Of course I love him very much. Well, what do you think?
How do you feel about mutants, Lisa?
Just the way everyone else does, I suppose.
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, I feel sort of pity for them. But still, pity and all makes me feel creepy to think about people with two heads and all.
Well, none of them have two heads, Lisa. That particular mutation doesn't survive to adulthood. Most of the really strange ones die off the first few weeks of life.
No, even so, I've seen pictures of them. Oof. It's a good thing they keep themselves cooped up in their sanctuaries. Good for them and good for us.
Well, sometimes they leave the sanctuaries. They try to live like normal people.
But they aren't normal people.
Well, sometimes they can convince others that they are normal. We can be very convincing, Lisa.
We?
I'm a mutant, Lisa. I'm casting a mental projection that hides my true appearance.
Oh, no. Leave me alone. Get out of the car.
Oh, slow down. I won't hurt you. I'm very friendly. I'm a lonely person, Lisa, and you're so beautiful. You're not afraid of me, are you?
I'm not afraid of you.
Of course you aren't. You like me. You like me very much. I'm tall and broad-shouldered, and you think I'm handsome.
Very handsome.
More handsome than your fiancé, Tony.
Of course.
You're wondering what you ever saw in Tony, aren't you? You're starting to forget you ever had any liking for him at all.
I can't imagine how I could ever let myself think I cared for him.
You're forgetting him rapidly. You don't even know who Tony is now, but you know who I am, don't you?
Yes. Yes, of course.
And you love me. You've only known me for a few minutes, but despite that, you've fallen deeply in love with me. Haven't you, Lisa?
Yes. I love you, Clyde.
And I love you, Lisa. Will you marry me, Lisa?
Of course, Clyde. Yes, I'll marry you, darling.
Of course, it isn't really Clyde Merrick's fault. He's not responsible for what he is. He was made that way by the genetic mutations caused by too much atomic warfare. It isn't his fault. But that doesn't make him tolerable, does it? He is an intolerable menace.
Oh, that was a wonderful meal, darling. You know, I don't know how you did it. All those people waiting in line for tables, and the head waiter just took you right over to the spot.
I have ways of being persuasive.
Oh, I see. You love me?
Of course, Lisa.
We'll be married tomorrow and go far, far away. Rent a cabin somewhere and stay there for months and months and just read and fish and sleep. Oh, it sounds wonderful.
It is wonderful. Just the two of us.
I can't wait.
You're not worried about Tony, are you?
Tony? I don't know anyone named Tony, do I?
No, you don't know anyone named Tony. Come on, let's get out of here.
If you say so, darling. Where will we go?
To your car. We'll drive out into the country. You can't see the stars here in town.
You haven't paid the chill.
It doesn't matter. You see them trying to stop me?
Well, no, but
I can eat for free any time. You see? They're smiling goodbye to us. Take the road you were on this morning when you met me.
Of course.
Lisa.
What is it, dear?
Do you really love me? Really and truly love?
I love you, Clyde.
No. No, you don't. Not at all.
Oh, whatever do you mean?
It's no good. It isn't real. It's just another fraud.
I don't understand.
You don't love me. Not really. I made you think you do, and you say you do, but that isn't enough. Every time I'd kiss you, every time I'd hold you in my arms, I'd know you were nothing but a puppet playing the role I made you play. Do you call that love?
Clyde, you're talking nonsense.
I wish I were. I thought I might be able to find some fulfillment outside the sanctuary, but I was wrong. What good is it all? I can fool everyone. Everyone except myself. Lisa, tell me again. How do I look to you?
Why, tall, very good-looking, blonde hair, kind of wavy, regular features.
In other words, as handsome as a video star. All right, stop the car.
Stop it? Why?
Because I want you to.
Well?
Ever since I left the sanctuary this morning, I've been projecting a false appearance. It's a power of mine. Something special I have, thanks to the otherwise unkind providence. I'm going to turn that projection off now, Lisa. Let you have a look at me as I really am. As I look without the benefit of hypnotic trickery.
Oh, no! Oh, no! Hideous! Those eyes, the skin.
Everything's all right now. You're starting to forget. In a moment, you'll have forgotten. There. All better. How do you feel?
All right, Clyde.
Good. But you see, Lisa, I was wrong. I thought if I left the sanctuary at last, disguising myself as one of the normals, I could be happier. I could... But it would be a synthetic happiness. You can't live on nothing but cotton candy, Lisa. Start the car.
Yes,
Clyde. Drive up the hill to your left. And that's it, right up to those big gates. All right, stop here. This is the the sanctuary. I'm back home now. Home to stay where I belong.
Clyde, I'm all mixed up. I don't know what's happening.
You're going to turn your car around and drive home, Lisa. You're going to go home and go to bed. And when you wake up in the morning, you'll have no recollection of today at all. You'll simply have lost a day. And you'll marry your Tony, and you'll be happy with him. Is that clear, Lisa?
Yes, Clyde.
All right, now. You're beginning to forget me already. Say goodbye to me, Lisa.
Goodbye, Clyde.
That's right. No, don't kiss me.
Clyde Merrick was. But while he could fool all those around him, he didn't fool himself.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from February 12th, 1958. And that brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.